The new state budget signed by Governor Scott Walker last month makes changes to safety net programs in Wisconsin, including Food Share, the food assistance program. We're examining the changes to the program this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Government programs that help people eat may undergo big changes. There are substantial cuts proposed at the national level, and here in Wisconsin, fewer people could be eligible under the new state budget. WPR's health reporter Shemaine Mills looked into how this could have more people relying on food pantries.
It's early afternoon at this rural Dane County church, and a crowd is lining up to get in. This is one of 27 mobile food pantries run by Second Harvest. Every month, about 17,000 pounds of food is brought in by semi-truck. The inside of the church looks like a small supermarket, complete with rows of food and grocery carts clattering across the floor. Before entering the church to get groceries, more than 200 people wait in line to get 80 pounds of everything from meat and cheese to fruit and cereal. Tammy Weller is one of them.
We have 8 people in our family, and I can't support them all on disability only.
Weller says her husband lost a lung to Agent Orange, an herbicide used during the Vietnam War. The family's income is more than what's allowed to qualify for government food assistance, known as Food Share in Wisconsin. Weller says she's come to food pantries for 20 years.
Otherwise, we would run out of food. My kids come first.
Weller drives 16 miles one way to get to the pantry. Another woman in line, Tammy Butler, drives 22 miles one way. With car keys rattling in her hands, she describes the careful calculation of using costly gas to get free food.
It's worth the gas money because you get over probably $100 worth of groceries.
Butler raises 2 teens on her own. She says kidney disease and a bad back prevent her from working, but she's not on disability. Her kids don't receive child support from their father, but one does get Social Security. The family also relies on $300 a month in food share benefits. It pays for only part of their grocery bill.
You don't get enough from food share to cover the month. You have to spend money out of your pocket.
Butler also drives to a second food pantry in Reeseville.
And they're wonderful. They really help people out. They have, they're helping all the migrant families out right now that are working at the canning factory.
Like Butler, Anthony Kellis also relies on both the mobile food pantry and food share.
$16 a month in food stamps doesn't quite cut it.
Kellis is a military veteran who gets disability. He and his wife live in subsidized housing. They have a car which allows them to drive to this mobile food pantry.
This just isn't for poor people. I'm seeing a lot of middle-class people. You take a look at the vehicles out in the lot. You'll see yourself a lot of SUVs.
This can lead to the perception that some are using food pantries or receiving government assistance when they don't need to. A provision in the recently passed state budget prevents people from getting food assistance if they have $25,000 or more in assets. This would not include a primary residence or a vehicle, but it would apply to stocks and bonds, along with checking and savings accounts. David Lee is executive director of Feeding Wisconsin.
So, look, if I lost my job and I needed to have some bridge dollars to feed my family while I looked for a job, I don't think we should be creating disincentives for people to save.
A legislative fiscal bureau analysis says the asset threshold is high enough it does not create a disincentive to work or save. It's estimated that 1,900 households would be impacted if the state gets federal permission to implement the policy. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And this is our starting point for the conversation on food share. David Lee is executive director of Feeding Wisconsin. That's a trade group for 6 regional food banks that stock local pantries across the state. David, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Kate.
Well, can you explain, first of all, the changes that we are going to see here to the food share program?
So 3 major things. The first one is that families with children will have to work 80 hours a month in order to continue to be eligible for benefits. This is an extension of the work requirement for single adults without children that was implemented back in our state, I think a year and a half ago. The second one is this asset test that we heard a little bit about in the
piece.
And then the third is potentially a drug test for food share as a condition for eligibility for food share.
Break down this asset test. What is that? What is this threshold?
So the threshold is $25,000 in cash or other assets that could be converted to cash without penalty. I think that's what it says in the budget provision.
Like your car, or what might other assets be?
Yeah, it exempts cars and a primary residence,
okay,
so home, but potentially an IRA or other things that you might have that you can turn into cash, right? And I think that's it's something that concerns us a little bit, right? That create disincentives to save, especially since we know that saving is a sure way out of poverty, and we ought to be encouraging people to save and put money away for retirement. And I think the other interesting thing about this too, right, is the sort of sub-barrier to this is that most people who are on the food share program average having about $300 in savings, right? So, you know, it wouldn't affect them necessarily, but it does create a barrier insofar as having to verify that you don't have $25,000 in savings, right? That doesn't feel like a good way to run a program when we know that the vast majority of people don't reach that threshold.
Wisconsin lawmakers are pushing forward trying to get federal permission to give drug tests. Can you explain this portion of it?
Sure. So drug testing for food share, as of right now, is illegal. The federal law states that you can't treat food share, or SNAP, as it's known at the federal level, any differently than anybody else. So that makes drug testing not comply with federal law. However, with a new administration, a new secretary at the USDA, I think whether or not this remains to be against federal law remains to be seen. So there, as you may remember, there were some lawsuits earlier this year, late last year, regarding the ability for Wisconsin to implement a drug test for food share. And we're sort of, it seems like we're trying to get after it again this year.
I was looking at some of the numbers on the food share assistance program, numbers tied to the program. A little more than 18,000 people, apparently 18,299 receiving assistance. Is that about right? Should there be more people on food assistance?
On the food share program?
Yeah.
I think you may have been looking at a segment in our state. Almost 700,000 people are enrolled in the food share program.
Oh, okay. What about the work provision, having to work to get the benefits?
I think we can all agree that a good job is the best anti-hunger tool. And I think it's also important to remember that while food share has become an income support, for better or for worse, right, it helps people who are making low wages have enough money to buy food that they need in order to work. It's important to remember that food share is not a work program. It can be a pathway for people to work, certainly, right? You have to eat in order to work, but it's not a work program. I think it's important that folks have the opportunity to work, but if, we're at a 4.5% unemployment rate, it feels like potentially access to jobs or access to the tools somebody might need for a good job, just it might not be around, right? And I think that becomes, for me, a more interesting question for us to solve as instead of applying a overly broad work requirement that doesn't really address the kind of the real lives of folks in local communities every day.
Have you seen the number of people on the food assistance program stay steady over the years, over the decades, or has it fluctuated?
Yeah, so I can say that nationally, the participation in food share, or SNAP, skyrocketed after the Great Recession, and that's natural, right?
Right.
It was the worst economic shock since the Great Depression, and without other cash assistance programs, right? Because welfare, as you may remember, was changed in the late 90s. Participation in food share doubled. And that's, you know, I think any discussion about how many people on the food share program or on SNAP without recognizing that there was a very real reason why that happened in 2008 is sort of disingenuous. What's encouraging, and this gets back to your earlier question about how many people I think should be on the food share program. I think nobody should be on the food share program, right?
And I want to hold on to that point here because we're up against a break. Join in the conversation about the food share program, the food assistance program here in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on current requirements and restrictions in place to receive benefits? Join in. We're taking a closer look at Wisconsin's food share program this hour and changes on the horizon with David Lee. He's executive director of Feeding Wisconsin. That's a trade group for regional food banks. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you or someone you know face food insecurity? Where do you turn to? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. David, before the break, we were discussing the number of people on food assistance program through the decades. Where are we at today?
So we are just in Wisconsin, we are just under 700,000 people on the program. And I think I was saying before the break that, you know, we don't want people to be on food share at all. You know, like, well, I think this is a goal that we all share, right? We don't want people on public assistance. We want people to be able to buy food in a dignified way, like in the supermarket, like everybody else. But I think it's important to remember that just a few years ago, we had, you know, over 800,000 people on the program, and it's now under 700,000. So just like national trends, participation in the food share program in Wisconsin are beginning to decline as the economy is getting better. And this is the natural way to shrink the program, right? The program has a natural way to get smaller, and that's to have people who are participating in the program graduate out of it because they're making enough money to support their families. And I think those are the policies we ought to be moving towards, right? Is how do we naturally contract the program as opposed to artificially contract the program, which, and by that I mean by implementing these arbitrary requirements that change eligibility, that, you know, would shuffle people off the program despite the fact, excuse me, that they're still not making enough money to afford enough healthy food for themselves.
Well, let's take a call now. Chris in Adams. Go ahead, Chris.
Good morning. I've been on food share for a number of years. I'm disabled. And I am so glad I get to talk to your guest because he can do something about one of the issues I'm having. But the first thing is that my food share, even though my expenses have pretty much tripled in the past 5 years with rent and the expense of food and everything, my food share has gone down by 90%. That's one of the things that Scott Walker has done to people. The other thing is that the state of Wisconsin automatically takes my federal quota, my cost of living increase, out of my food share amount. So if I get an increase from the federal government, it automatically comes out of my food share. I'm on a restricted diet, and about half of the food that I get at the food pantry, I can't eat. The food pantry that I go to will not allow me to substitute anything, and that's against the law. So maybe your guests can do something about that by sending a memo out to all the food pantries and tell them, I know that they get federal money to buy food for people, but we're also feeding people a lot of garbage at the food pantries that they could otherwise go to the grocery store and buy healthy food. And the last thing I want to...
Let's get David first to respond to that. Thank you, Chris. David, go ahead with that.
Thank you so much, Chris, for that. And I just a quick note on the pantries. The pantries within our network do not restrict. In addition to that, we are always working on improving our food. food banks choices for people with restricted diets, recognizing that is a very real thing. So we are on the case. As for Chris's other concerns about the food share program, I think she's highlighted onto a thing that has been a little bit underreported, in that the food share program over the last 10 years has been cut by about $8 billion nationally, or $9 billion nationally, right? So from 2010 until today, the federal SNAP program, which is known as food share here in Wisconsin, has already been cut. And people like Chris and the, 700,000 others of our friends and neighbors living across our state have seen a benefit decline year over year in sheer benefit dollars. And that affects, as you heard, people in their pocketbooks, and particularly with someone like Chris, who has, restricted diet and other challenges, that makes, getting through, very difficult.
Let's take another call now. Dan in Drummond. Go ahead, Dan.
The thing is, I'm a senior citizen, and I'm on a set income. Now, I only get, and I know there's other senior citizens also, we only get $15 a month. So that $15, for us to make that last, we have to buy things like dollar packs of hot dogs or dollar packs of bologna or something like that. We can't go out and buy the good stuff that we're expecting to buy. I mean, I know there's a lady where I live that gets $763 a month, and a third of that goes for rent. Now, how are we supposed to live? I would love to see these politicians, these Republicans, try to live on that amount of money.
David Lee, what about money in assistance programs going to rent? What is the issue there?
So, there are other programs at the federal level and the state level that help to offset some of the costs as it relates to rent and childcare and other things, right? So that's separate. I think what the caller's concern here is really, I think, salient, in that typically older Wisconsinites qualify for a little bit less because they have, while they are living on a fixed income, they have other things. They have, Social Security payments or some assets. And I think that puts the amount that they're eligible for at a fairly low amount. So $15, as the caller said. Clearly that is tough for somebody to get by if they are living on a low fixed income and they have high medical bills or other bills that they have to pay for and they can't work. And I think that's the thing that we forget about the food share program and the SNAP program nationally, is that over 50%, that near 60% of all beneficiaries in the food share program here in Wisconsin are people who we don't expect to work, namely children or the elderly, blind, and disabled. Of the remaining 40%, nearly half, just over half of them, are already working, and they're just not making enough to be off of the program. And so when we are talking about the program and the folks who are, who many of these policies are targeted after, we're talking about a fairly small number of people. But then clearly, particularly when we're talking about benefit cuts, people like the previous two callers get sort of, swept up in that. And that feels, I think we can laser target policies a little bit better without changing the fundamental structure of the program. Which is a federal guarantee that if you qualify, you will get some level of benefit. It unfortunately might be $15 or it might be a little bit more.
We're talking right now with David Lee. He's executive director of Feeding Wisconsin. We're discussing changes and possible changes to Wisconsin's food assistance program called Food Share. You can join in with your comments and questions at 800-642-1234. David, I was reading an opinion piece yesterday in the Daily Citizen. State Representative Mark Bourne, who represents the 39th Assembly District, he wrote it, and he said, in an effort to reduce food share fraud, this budget creates a process under which food share benefits that are left unused for 6 months or more would be removed and stored offline. He went on to say it's important our public assistance programs are used for their true purpose and that their resources are reserved for those truly in need. How prevalent of an issue is waste, fraud, and abuse of the food share program?
Any wasted public dollar is a problem, right? Because it undermines the trust in the program. And that's true across the board, not just for food share, right? That's true for any federal program that or state program that repurposes taxpayer dollars. However, with the food share program, the level of fraud is exceedingly low. It is about 1.5% of total program benefits. And this might sound a little bit flip, but I would say that if any private industry had a 1% or 1.5% loss rate, we would be trying to study how they did it, right? Mm. So the food share program does not have a waste, fraud, and abuse problem. I think what Representative Bourne's comment was about regarding the expunging of unused benefits. You know, I think we have this perception that, you know, people aren't saving benefits up, right? I think the when they get food share benefits, by and large, they're used at the store to buy food that month. However, there are instances when people, you know, saving benefits may not be a bad thing, right? Like, for example, the previous caller who gets $15 a month, it sounded like that person had, you know, monthly expenses to buy food, right? So that's a bad example. But if somebody else were getting $15 a month, they didn't need it, a senior who was getting $15 a month and didn't need it, I think it's not a terrible thing for that person to be able to potentially bank those benefits up and maybe, you know, have a nice Thanksgiving dinner for their family. That doesn't feel like a bad thing for me. And I also don't believe that saving benefits is fraudulent, because at some point, well, first, it's not against the law. It's not against the federal law. And second, at some point, that family, that person who has been saving up these benefits will go and buy food. And by the way, mind you that, you know, it's given the cyclical nature of work, particularly low-wage work, maybe that person might not need it that month, right? Because they have other cash income that's coming in through work, and maybe they know they're not going to be working next month and they need to use it then.
We're talking right now with David Lee, who's Executive Director of Feeding America. We're discussing the Food Share program in Wisconsin. What are your thoughts on current requirements and restrictions in place to receive food stamp benefits? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you think drug testing food share recipients or requiring them to work is an effective approach to prevent abuse? Are you or have you or someone you know been a recipient of the food share assistance program? How did that work for you? How do these changes affect you and your family? Join into the discussion at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And now we're returning to the second part of the Food Share program feature story. Governor Scott Walker wants permission from the federal government to drug test recipients, and more people will have to work to receive benefits. WPR's health reporter Shemaine Mills looks at how this could shift the safety net for those now who rely on government help.
2 years ago, Wisconsin required able-bodied adults to work in order to receive food stamps, known as Food Share. thousands were dropped from the program. Now the work requirement has been expanded to parents of school-age children. Eligibility for food share could shrink and reliance on food pantries grow, not only because of state changes, but billions of dollars in proposed cuts at the federal level. All this worries Tammy Butler. She relies on food share to feed herself and her two kids. While waiting in line for free groceries at a rural food pantry in August, she explained she can't work and hasn't been able to get disability benefits either.
I've been waiting for 5 years. I hurt my back. I've got kidney disease, a liver disease. I use the food pantries. You know, I barely make it.
David Lee is executive director of Feeding Wisconsin, a trade group for 6 regional food banks. He's also concerned about changes to food assistance.
The emergency food system was not designed to do the work of the federal government. We are designed to work in partnership to fill in gaps.
Over the years, the social safety net has expanded and contracted as attitudes, politics, and economies changed. When the Great Recession receded, Wisconsin and other states implemented a federal work requirement that had been waived because of lack of jobs. Then in January of this year, Governor Walker announced he would build on the reforms initiated by his predecessor, Tommy Thompson.
You know, we are good and decent people in this state. We will help people when they were down and out, but for those who are able, public assistance should be a trampoline, not a hammock.
At the time, the state's largest business group, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, said the current safety net created a disincentive to work. Companies were having trouble finding employees. David Lee says that's because some can't get to a job or find work that pays the bills.
I think the question on self-reliance is, look, a good job is the best anti-hunger tool, right? The question then becomes, are there good jobs?
A UW-Madison report found poverty is down in the state and unemployment has declined. But Lee says many of the jobs available are only part-time or pay poorly.
The jobs that are coming back are not the jobs that we had pre-recession. They're more lower-wage jobs. People are working less hours.
The state says it's had success in linking food share recipients to jobs and job training. A recent report showed 18,000 food share participants working for an average of 33 hours a week for $12 an hour. All were able-bodied adults without dependents. Governor Walker indicated in January he wanted even more people working for food.
We now want to have adults who have children who are school age enter the workforce as well. And so we're going to, in our proposal, enact a similar requirement that says you need to be employed at least 80 hours a month.
The state report on food share employment showed only 30% of those referred to the work program actually enrolled. Lee says that's not good enough.
We are supportive of programs that help connect people to work, but work training programs have to work.
Advocates for the poor say reforms intended to help may cause some to fall through the cracks as the safety net shifts when state and national policies change. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And as we come back from the news break, we'll be discussing how the changes to the food share program will streamline the program and make it more cost effective. As Shemaine Mills was reporting there in her two-part series, Governor Scott Walker would tighten up food assistance eligibility and make changes to public assistance programs that are meant to combat waste, fraud, and abuse. What do you think of these programs? 800-642-1234. David Lee, meanwhile, stays with us. He's executive director of the Feeding Wisconsin program. And when we come back, we'll gather more of your thoughts on Wisconsin's food assistance program. We're back right after this news from NPR and WPR. The Congressional Budget Office has estimated that as of December 2016, the average household was taking home about $252 per month of Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program SNAP benefits. However, SNAP is in line for major cuts on a federal level. And on the state level, the new state budget signed by Governor Walker would tighten up food eligibility, the program for food eligibility, and making changes to other public assistance programs. Join into this discussion, 800-642-1234. David Lee stays with us. He's the head of Feeding Wisconsin. Let's go right to the phones now with Corey in Sheboygan Falls. Go ahead, Corey.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to preface this with the fact that I have a job, full-time job, have had a nice paying full-time job, what I would consider, for about 5 years. And I mean, I think it's pretty disgusting the fact that we want to try and drug test these people who want and need, you know, some help with food. When I think it was about a year or two ago, I read an article about Arizona doing the same thing and spending like $10 million to catch a handful of people.
David, the cost of drug testing.
Yeah, so high. It's very high. And from the states over the last few years that have implemented a drug test for welfare benefits, not for food share, the results have been relatively haven't been great, right? They've only caught a couple of folks for the millions of dollars they have invested in drug testing, or they've only found a few people who are using drugs in the welfare program. And, you know, I think that's, given our state budget that just passed, you know, I wonder if that's a good use of taxpayer dollars to go after people whom we know do not utilize drugs at a higher rate than the general population, right? People in welfare programs don't utilize drugs at a higher rate than people who are not on welfare programs. And, you know, just a quick point on this too, because clearly the conversation right now regarding opioid addiction is a very real one. Mm. And, you know, I don't think that that drug testing as a condition for food share employability is the right way to address the overall crisis of opioid addiction in our state.
Corey, thanks for the call. Let's now go to Timothy in La Crosse. Go ahead, Timothy.
I agree with the last caller. That is exactly where I was headed. As a person that before I became disabled, I worked in human resources. I know exactly how much it costs to drug test people. And I guess my whole thought process on that, too, is also as a disabled person living in Wisconsin, I guess I had approached the governor's office and I had asked him through an email and when he had a form one time, how does it affect those who are on disability? Because a lot of one thing that's not public knowledge is that there are programs in which even people who are disabled need to perform some type of work in order to have medical benefits in the state of Wisconsin. That is a fact. I know people every day that have to perform some kind of work monthly, every month, keep a log of it, and it's just kind of a dangerous game you play when you're telling people that possibly that you would have to work. I guess my next question, or what I was trying to ask them, is who do you decide is qualified and needs to work in order to continue to obtain those benefits? And then how do you decipher and who do you decide is going to be tested and who would not be tested? I just think that if the key factor is if you're looking at money that you don't have to spend and you don't want to spend, why would you create excess costs?
David, can you address that?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think the issue with having people work or imposing different requirements for people to access benefits, I think is a really, really important one, right? So when we, after the work requirement for single adults without children, more commonly known as ABODs, went into effect a year and a half ago, what we found is that a lot of the folks who were sort of shuffled off the program were people with low employability. an undiagnosed medical condition that keeps them from the workforce or some other challenges to participating in the labor force. And these broad work requirements or these broad requirements don't really address the messiness of life and a person's individual circumstances. And I think the way we ought to do that is to laser target these programs and fine tune them a little bit more to ensure that they that they're able to do what they are meant to do, which is for food share to ensure that people have a little bit of money to buy the healthy, nutritious food they need to live and live a healthy life. And then potentially for folks who are able and have low barriers to employment to connect them to jobs. That feels like the reasonable solution that I think is the goal that we all share.
Well, Timothy, thanks for calling in. Let's now go to John in Three Lakes. Hi, John.
How are you doing?
Good.
I guess I'm just calling because I am definitely for...
Oh, he's breaking apart. John, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yep. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I'm for the stricter requirements just because I've seen so much fraud. I think the shameful part is when someone says that they're for a little stricter requirements, I think people don't realize that if there were some more stringent restrictions, there would be more money for the people that really are in need.
John, where have you seen the fraud? Where have you seen it?
I mean, I've seen it all over. I've seen people paying for cigars with, SNAP cards. And I know people will say that that's illegal, but the problem is these, some of these gas stations and little places will literally give people money for their food assistance card. And, if you don't cut down on the fraud, what you're doing is you're not saving money for the people that really need it. I don't understand how you said $250 the average person was receiving in Wisconsin. So, if you look at it, how many people are receiving it and how many people aren't, the average person that's receiving it probably is getting around $1,000 a month.
Let's let David jump in here. David, go ahead.
So a lot of stuff there to unpack. I certainly share John's worry about ensuring that people who are participating in the program and who are on either side, right, the beneficiary side or the retailer side, are not fraudulent. Again, the rates of fraud are exceedingly low. His deeper point, which sort of speaks to, I think, a core emotional concern that we all have, which is this idea that if people weren't sort of utilizing the benefits the wrong way, there'd be more to go around for everybody else. And that's not true, right? This program is a federal guarantee, which means that if you're eligible for benefits, you will get benefits. And that is a core program feature that we do not want changed in this upcoming budget process and this upcoming farm bill at the federal level. I think, as it relates to how people are utilizing their benefits, that is, I think a conversation we have continued to have for the last few years, right? You hear the stories about the person buying cake. Well, I could say that I've seen somebody buying cake on food share for their kid's birthday. And I don't think that that is a bad thing because people, on food share should be able to celebrate their birthdays.
Are food pantries anticipating more people will be turning to them as we see these stricter, more stringent eligibility requirements go into effect?
Yeah, our food banks are doing some planning to see what could happen or to have some insights as to what could happen with the changes at the state level and also the bigger cuts that could be coming at the federal level. But I think it's important to remember that, the over 1,000 food pantries that our food banks serve throughout our state are largely run by volunteers and other non-professional staff, and they're open a couple hours a week, if that, right? Maybe one or two times a month. Like I said in one of the segments, our network wasn't geared to catch a deluge.
right? Mm. It's here to fill in gaps. And we're afraid, and we're trying to sort of get our minds around the discussion surrounding the larger cuts at the federal level, which are pretty intense for what's being proposed. I don't know if you've been following, or if listeners have been following. The House just passed their budget last week that would cut the food share program by billions of dollars. And the Senate is going to take action on their budget, I think, next week. And so, and then beyond that, there's still the Farm Bill, which is where the SNAP program is authorized and paid for in the federal budget that's coming up next year. So there are, getting through our state budget and some of these changes that our state legislature and governor have proposed is just the first hurdle, right? We have a number of different hurdles, and we are hoping that people stay engaged with the process, because, particularly folks who are on the program, our legislators need to hear from them.
And as we wrap up here, David, how would you like to see the state approach the food share program, the benefits, the requirements in the future? Are there some fixes that you see could be implemented?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. I think there are things that we can do to make sure that the food share program works for people, right? Clearly, work training has to work. The numbers that Chemaine Mills reported, 30% of people who referred to the program found jobs. That feels we need to figure out why that is and improve that number. But we have to ensure high quality, cost effective, and efficient data driven administration for the program, right? Like, again, taxpayer funds are important, and we need to make sure the program runs cost effectively and efficient. And the changes that are made are pilot tested, understood, and driven by data. We have to prioritize policies for natural contraction versus artificial contraction. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Let's not make eligibility changes to the program that artificially contract the program. Let's have policies that sort of graduate people from the program.
And I have to stop you there. Thank you so much for joining us. That was David Lee, Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin. And by the way, we reached out to 8 state lawmakers to discuss changes to the food share program. None could join us. This hour was produced by Naeja Ellison and Keely Baltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.